Okay, so our third speaker in the session is Giorgio Maria Di Nunzio.
Yes.
Interactive naive Bayes using shiny text retrieval classification and quantification, as you can all read.
Okay, thanks very much. So I'm Giorgio Di Nunzio. I'm assistant professor at the Department of Information Engineering of University of Padua. I'm presenting in this talk parts of the work I've been doing in the last four or five years, which is about text classification mainly using one visualization that I'll present to you today and adding interactivity with Shiny. So a bit of context. I started to look for the beginning of interactive machine learning, at least from an academic scientific paper's perspective. And I guess that it was coined the keyword interactive machine learning around late 90s. And there is a paper which is very, very cited in this area, which is from Michael Ankers from University of Berlin and other people from the same university, who did a work on visualization of a classification tree, an interactive building of a classification tree. And this is actually one figure of the original paper. So they had sliders to adjust the number of features, to adjust the thresholds for each node, and see interactively what was the classification error by doing those changes. Then I'm pretty sure that in 2003 we can find the first paper with the title Interactive Machine Learning, which was written by Fields and Olson, to researchers from Brigham Young University. And they studied in this paper a very interesting thing, because I think it was the first time it was made a study that compared the performances of using or not using interactivity. So they had a color-based segmentation algorithm, and they used it alone, standalone. So they automatically clustered images. And they also did an interactive version of the same algorithm, which used the suggestions given by the user, who were not even experts in the field. Because the idea was, give me some sketch, give me some hint about the area that you want to cluster. So in this case, you see the black line means that the user said, OK, I'm interested in the hand. And then paint just a little bit of the area that you need to cluster. And this produced performance in the clustering algorithm, which was significantly better than not doing it. So this area is now very active. There is a group in Rainbow, Microsoft Research. They are doing lots of stuff about interactive machine learning. They also have a new group called, I think, machine teaching or something like that. And this is an example of a software they used by non-expert users to tag and annotate web pages. So users are given web pages that should be annotated with labels. And during the activity of labeling, users can add keywords, add suggestions. And during these interactions, they also have here at the bottom of the page the situation of the performance of the classifier. So they interactively build these kind of classifiers. So now in this talk I will present to you what I call the geometry of Bayes rule. So I use naive Bayes classification to classify, for example, text documents. And I call geometry because the visual interpretation has nice analogies with some two-dimensional geometry that I like. And then I present the likelihood space, which is the idea of projecting documents on using likelihoods. And then I'll give you some demos. So the geometry of naive Bayes, it's very simple. So let's start with the simplest situation. So you only have two categories. So you have a binary classification problem. You have a category and its complement. So this is usually the situation where you have a one versus all classification. And we want to classify an object, though. Suppose that we can estimate the probability of the class given the object, and you compare these two probabilities and decide what we should do. So the idea is very simple. Why don't we use these two probabilities as two coordinates in a two-dimensional space? So what happens is this. So suppose that this is the object that we are estimating. It has a probability of 0.7 of belonging to class 1 or class C, and the complement 1 minus 0.7, so 0.3 of belonging to the complementary class. So what's the choice? What would you do? At this point, you have to decide whether you want to classify it under C or complement C. So this is the basic idea. Now, we don't compute directly the posterior probability. We use Bayes' rule to compute that. So we estimate the likelihood of the object. We estimate, if we have training data, we estimate the parameters of the likelihood, and then we compute the likelihood of the object. We estimate the probability of the class, and we divide by this normalization factor, which is just the sum of the two, the PO given C and PC, and the respective of the negative class. So nothing changes here, but if I want to add one more thing, if you want to change the decision rule, you can use cost-sensitive learning or Bayesian decision theory. So everything boils down to one number, which is this parameter m, which for me is an angular coefficient, and we'll show you in a minute. It's just the combination of the four costs that you have when you have a binary classification problem. So you have a cost for deciding for the right class, or cost for deciding for one class given that the other one is correct, and the other two for the negative class. So what we can do now, is to see what happens when we have an unbalanced class situation on a two-dimensional space. Now, suppose that we have an object. Suppose that we have two coins, and you flip these two coins. These two coins represent a feature, and these two coins are the two classes. So suppose that you flip one coin 1,000 times, and 95% of the time, it gives heads. And you flip the other coin, and you have maybe 7% is okay, 9, 4. I mean, it's very unlikely to get heads with the other coin. Now, in a balanced class situation, it's quite easy to predict if I give you heads, what was the coin. Now, the problem is that, if one of the two coins is very unlikely, you automatically decide for the class that is most likely, even though the likelihood says it gives you a very strong evidence that it should be the other way around. And this is known, okay? But you can see it now. Can we adjust this situation? Yes, we can do it with the costs. In this case, it's the parameter m that we can interpret as the slope of a line. And if I adjust the parameter m, now I recover the situation. So now I can classify it correctly, or at least what the common sense would say, okay? So this is a very nice way to show the unbalanced class situation. So going back, to the two-dimensional visualization, now we usually don't take into account the normalization factor, PDO. It's the same number, we divide by the same number, so we don't use it. Now, what it means in geometrical terms from a visualization perspective. So we are multiplying by PDO to cancel out PDO. So you are multiplying by the same factor, which is a number between 0 and 1. So you are just scaling the coordinates in this way. So you start from this, and by normalizing, you just shrink the coordinates along, and you go directly to the origin. That's the idea. But this is the most important part of this visualization, because this gives you this moves the points from the segment 0, 1, 1, 0 to an area which is scattered, and it allows you to classify much better the points. And we have a problem. So when you compute the likelihood, you usually use a conditional independence assumption. So suppose that you have objects that are described by n features. With the naive Bayes assumption, you just factorize this probability into all the small probabilities of each feature given the category. Now, this becomes a problem from an arithmetical point of view, because you go to zero very, very quickly. So this is just with three features. What happens if you have 1,000? Okay, so we use the logarithm to avoid this. So we compute the logarithm of the product of the feature and becomes the sum of the logarithm, and then we are done. So we just move from the first quadrant, all the coordinates are positive, to the third quadrant of a two-dimensional space, all everything is negative, but this is the idea. So how does it work in a real world setting, I mean, with a real world problem? So I implemented in Shiny all of this stuff, and I use the Reuters 21578 corpus, which is a very standard classification corpus for comparing performances among classifiers. I've done some classical text preprocessing to remove punctuations, convert to lowercase, and so on. And then I also added one thing that it will be clear in a minute. So what happens? Is this. Now you have the training data plotted here on the left and the validation data here. And you can see, and the blue line is the default decision line, which is the diagonal. Now what happens when you have classes that are a little bit unbalanced or more unbalanced, like this one? So is it completely wrong? The naive-Bayes classifier, or there's something we can do. Because as you can see, the distribution of the points is good, is the decision line that is not where it should be. So whenever you use the 0-1 loss function, be careful because this is what happens. So I can recover this by adjusting the, for example, the give you an example like this. So I change the intercept, and I change the angular coefficient, and then I moved from an F1 score of 0.2 to 0.7 in just a few moments like that. Is it the only thing I can do? I can only change the number of features. So I start from 30,000 features. What happens if I change the number of features and I can see it? I can change also the smoothing parameters. So actually, with this approach, you are interacting with the classifier and understanding why, in some cases, it's not working and where you should optimize, which is the important thing. So going back, you can apply this to text classification. And this is the Shiny app link that you can use right now. You can use it also for text retrieval. If you want to retrieve text and see why some models perform better than others. Of course, models that have probabilistic output, you can do it and see what's happening. You can also study quantification, so the problem of computing the prevalence of a class. And I've done this work which compares the approach of optimizing a text quantifier on the F1 score, which is not the optimal choice, with another text quantifier that optimizes the Kullback library divergence, which is at the moment the best measure for computing the prevalence of a class. So final remarks. Here I've presented a geometric interpretation of naive-Bayes classifiers, which is very intuitive, very easy to see, and very helpful to understand why, to do some failure analysis, basically. So is it scalable for larger data sets? And this is a question I'm asking to myself when I use Shiny, because when I started to do some experiments on large data sets which contains 200,000 documents, for example, for text retrieval collections, it starts to be very slow, a few seconds. So it's not interactive anymore. So is it a question of processing power? Is it a problem also of visualization? What happens when you have 200,000 points to show? So the last thing, just to give you an idea, is to use this approach to gamify machine learning. So what happens if you remove all the technical stuff and give you this as a game? So I'll give it to 30 students and say, just separate these points, use a line. Why is this important? Because it gives me the idea of how much they could tell to the algorithm to to improve it, or if you want it, how much are they willing to pay? Because the game was try to build a classifier that performs better than the other guys that are playing, but using less resources as possible, which means they were given a little bit of money, but fake money, to buy training and validation resources. So it was important to see how much they were willing to pay to annotate data. And this kind of data can be collected automatically with this kind of game. So thank you very much. If you have any questions about technical.
Any questions?
Yes. I mean,
so it's a parameter.
Yes, it's a parameter. If you've seen, you have this, I don't have the slider, but there's a kind of menu where you can select either the class or the corpus and the task that you want to do, yes.
Any other questions? Well, let's thank our speaker again.